Good afternoon, everyone. It's nearly time for your evening activities. So just before we kind of get started, if you've hopefully already kind of seen the slide today, we're actually piloting the PowerPoint translator add-in that you saw in the keynote yesterday. So we've got that kind of running in the session today. So if you haven't already, go ahead and download the Microsoft Translator app and enter in that magic code. And you'll also see, hopefully, good transcription across the top in English. Obviously, on your devices, you can choose a language of your choice. And let's see how good the accuracy really is. I'll take a bit of a poll once we get into the translator section. So again, once you've got the app, tap the conversation icon and type in that code, LXZHJ, or scan the QR code. So I think we've got about 35 or so. So over 35 people using it. So it'd be great to get your feedback as we kind of trial it. And conversation code one more time. Give you 5 seconds to take a photo if you want to use it. Okay, I'll give you a bit longer than 5 seconds. Okay. Okay, I think everyone got it working. So two phones up, okay, fantastic. So let's get started. So thank you for coming along to the session. The title, which I didn't choose, is a bit of a mouthful. What this session all about is actually how you can help your applications communicate with humans in a more natural, more human way. Now, those applications are often assumed just to be bots. Now, bots play a huge role in this, and you'll see a few demos as we go along. But the key part of all the services that I'm going to go through is you can take those services and actually infuse them into the applications you're building today across any platform. So you don't need to be using a bot. You don't need to be on the Microsoft platform. And we'll go through a number of the scenarios. So in terms of background of who I am, so my name is Darren Jefford. I work in the services side or consulting side of Microsoft in the CTO office. So we partner very closely with our engineering and research teams, and then with on emerging technology, and then with customers on kind of first mover type of scenarios, where we partner with a customer who wants to do something for the first time. They want to transform their business. They want to try something new. They want to innovate. So actually, a lot of what I'm talking about today is my day job of figuring out what these technologies can do, how they work, what the limitations are, and actually understanding the scenarios that we can take to more broader scale. So in terms of just starting kind of the story, you know, if you think about applications and solutions that we all use or involved in writing today, we learn how to use the applications. We learn the context menus and the right clicks and the menu buttons and so on. People are still sent on training courses of how to actually do, you know, pretty simple or pretty straightforward line of business tasks in applications. So that's the paradigm today. We have an opportunity now to turn this around where actually technology can work for us and augment our skills in a far more kind of natural way. And there's a number of kind of different ways of doing this. You know, understanding what we say, so speech is one thing. If we type in a question, actually understanding the intent of that question. If you go to a travel booking website, you have to use a drop-down list and you type in, you know, Seattle, I'm going from Seattle, and then I'm going to London, and then you use the date pickers and so on. It's a pretty cumbersome experience, especially on a mobile app. Now, if I actually phoned up a travel agency, I would say, hey, I'd like to book a flight to Seattle, leaving next Tuesday, returning Friday. And the travel agent goes, fantastic, and gets on with it. Now, imagine if we could talk to our applications and services in a natural way, and they can help understand. And I'll go through some examples. So there's the kind of the listening aspect. You know, imagine in a meeting context where something is taking meeting notes and doing a transcription of that meeting, and actually knowing that me, Darren, said a number of things, and then Joe and Bill and whoever else in a meeting, actually understanding who said what in the meeting and understanding the intent of actions and actually assigning tasks and follow-up like an admin would do actually in a meeting with you. And also observation as well. So actually understanding tasks that you're doing and understanding patterns and then actually stepping in and saying, can I start to do those things for you? And I'll talk about some examples on the next few slides. So we've got a different way where technology can learn from us and be way more helpful than it is today. And we're just on kind of the start of this journey. Now, if you look at the artificial intelligence kind of portfolio, we break it down into four pillars. You know, the agent, the Cortana assistant, into applications. And one of the key aspects that from speaking with a lot of customers of going, this AI thing, it's very long term, it's futuristic, it's not really ready. Actually, these customers are already using it today. So hands up, who uses Office 365 at kind of work today? Okay, most of you, which is good. So are you familiar with the focused inbox today? Probably most of you should have that feature kind of turned on where it actually learns what emails I read and what emails I don't from certain people and starts to actually filter them out into another folder and actually say to me I should focus on these emails based on my kind of history and activity. So it's actually learning from me. That is a fairly simple model in that case, but we're seeing those examples already. Things like SwiftKey on iOS and Android, the keyboard that actually learns over time based on kind of the angle of your thumb on the screen, but also the word combinations you use. After you've used it for a good few weeks, it makes you realize just how predictive you are because you can type in one word and then just do autocomplete, 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 and it gets like six words in a row completely right, and you're like, I need to use more words, clearly. So that's another great example of AI being used, and things like the Pix camera of helping you take better photos. We have infrastructure that helps us kind of scale and operationalize these things. And we have under the services these kind of building blocks. So the entire focus of this talk is around the cognitive services. So the cognitive services are building blocks. They are services that you can choose to take one or five or 10 or 15. They're REST services. You can integrate them into any application, any solution that you like in any particular way. And you can see we've broken down across vision. So you saw some of the computer vision stuff. You've seen the stuff before where you take a photo of cows in a field and it will tell you, actually there's a herd of cows grazing on a field. We can actually help understand what's in those photos. And you saw yesterday where you can upload your own photos of your products, for example, and allow someone in a bot conversation to take a photo of a product on a shelf or at home and get kind of tailored support. So we've got some great capabilities there. And the focus of this talk is around language. How can we better build in kind of natural language capabilities into our solutions and your solutions? Now, these services, while most of them are fairly new and they're in preview, some of them are based on 15 to 20 years of Microsoft research. So we've had this technology for many years. We've had it baked into our products, but it's now kind of a case of, as of kind of last build, 12 months ago, breaking these out and making them available in discrete components. So we have the spell check, which we'll go through, language understanding, linguistic analysis, text analytics, translator, and the web language model. So we're going to go through each of these in a fair amount of detail. I've got demos for all of them. I haven't kind of canned anything, so this is going to be very interesting when we get to network speeds and things, but hopefully we'll all hold together. And for those of you that have used LUIS, the language understanding model, there's quite a bit of content towards the end. We're going to go through a lot of new features, a lot of things that people have been kind of shouting at me and others about why doesn't it do this, that we now have as of yesterday. So there's a lot of new features. So the Microsoft Translator, I don't really need to demo this particularly much, apart from obviously the built-in PowerPoint add-in that you're seeing kind of here today. So this is a service that most of you are probably familiar with or have heard about. If you go to Bing Translate into the website, again, you can paste in text and have that translated into any number of languages, including my favorite, Klingon, where you can have your content translated both ways with Klingon. And again, we have applications and it's integrated into Bing. But we have a set of REST APIs that if you want to build in translation natively into your applications and solutions, you can. You get an application key, you form the right REST web service request, and away you go. So it's cloud-based, obviously textual-based machine translation. I'll cover speech in a minute. There's over 60 languages. I think in virtually all of the customer scenarios, we're supporting all the key languages that come up, you know, time and time again, and different dialects and things. And there's various different kind of configurations of the translator. You can even extend it and bring in your own taxonomy, your own dictionaries. So if you've got your own product codes and names, you can improve the accuracy by actually extending it. And there's also options around no tracing as well, where you pay a little bit more, and this is kind of a private instance, and there's kind of no logging and things, which is important for some sectors as we go through. So it's your service, you pay per character, go and get a key, really, really simple, straightforward. And again, this is what the PowerPoint add-in kind of will be adding. Now, there's been a number of improvements, actually. So for those of you that have used the translator before and have gone English to Chinese, that's not, it's okay, but it's not great. There's actually been a big set of improvements around moving to a kind of neural network, which is what we're going to cover here. And obviously the key part of the translator is around data. You need data and data sets from Bing, for example, and actual usage of the translator service are kind of the fuel to the translation service. So as the more it gets used, the more content that we kind of understand, the better the accuracy becomes. So the whole neural network feature that I think was announced about a month ago that's kind of come through, really the difference of that is, you know, and I'm simplifying it massively. I did have far more complex slides that I found internally, but even I was kind of struggling a little bit with explaining the absolute kind of scientific detail. But the simple way that I kind of boiled it down to was instead of actually looking at a word and translating a word into another language, it's about taking more context. What are the words before and after that particular word, and actually improving the accuracy based on the context of the document. And that's led to a significant kind of improvement in kind of translation kind of quality. And I'll show an example on this slide. So if I switch to number 8, so there's a website you can go to. The URL was there. It's on the translator blog. If I go to here, there's a try and compare kind of feature on the website here where you can put in some text and you can hit translate and compare, and away you go. So does someone want to, who natively speaks a language other than English? Someone put their hand up. Gentleman in the middle there. Which language should we try it on? Yeah? Norwegian. Okay. So this is what happens when I do audience kind of participation. So Russian. Okay. So we've got Russian here. So let's just do, let's see if we can get a better one. What other restaurants you like to go to? It's not a great one. What did you go with? Let's try and pick something. Okay, I'm going to do translate and compare. So which one do you think is better? The one on the right? None of them are better. Okay, it's got more text on this. Let's give this one a go. On the left? Fantastic, let's see. Is this better? There you go, the neural network is actually better in that case. So, and we can pick other languages. Let's do Chinese. Anyone speak Mandarin? Okay, quite a few. So we'll do a raise of hands. So let me do very quickly Chinese simplified. Let's do the same thing. Okay, so hands up, you think the one on the left is better than the one on the right? None. Is the one on the right better? Or are they all... One on the right? A little bit better? Okay. There seems to be some consensus. Yes, neural network. Okay, so obviously still work in progress. These things will get better and better, but this is a kind of a significant kind of step forward with how translation goes. So I think part of what we've been doing internally is where we had scenarios before where the translation wasn't quite right, is we've been going back over those to actually get some, you know, actual real world kind of aspects there. So it gives you a bit of a flavor. Let's see if I get the right machine. So you can go ahead and kind of play with that. So I think it's turned on by default right now in kind of China and kind of Japanese, and there actually is a kind of on the API, there's a query string parameter you can add to kind of turn it on. It will be default moving forward. One of the aspects we get to, and I'll show a bot example as we go through, one of these things of actually it's not perfect, and actually a human is going to be perfect. If you have someone who can speak English and Mandarin, they are always going to have a better translation. But actually there are some downsides to humans of scalability. So actually if you're having to translate vast amounts of information, that's going to be very costly to go and do and very kind of time consuming to do. So actually, in that case, could translation be good enough if you're trying to get the sense of a document or try and get some intent from it, so some sort of kind of insight into that document? Obviously, I think the way that we are explaining it from an automatic translation is kind of, this isn't my phrasing, but they're mediocre to kind of good kind of quality. But the benefits are limitless scalability, seconds, maybe minutes, to actually go and kind of translate these things, and in kind of incredibly cheap compared to a human. So it's never going to be absolutely, well, for now, it won't be as good as a human, but actually, is it good enough? And actually, a lot of scenarios that we're seeing are where there's companies who are maybe writing a bot, and initially they're going to support English, but a limited set of their customers maybe speak other languages, and it's a way of expanding the reach of the bot with a good enough experience kind of moving forward before they go and do a more native model. In addition, we have the speech element. So this is a lot more complicated and is what you're seeing in the kind of the PowerPoint add-in. So this is capturing the voice and dealing with all the complexities of sort of voice capture and pauses and umming and ahhing and things that go on, then doing translation as part of that kind of experience as well. So again, it's really focused around conversations. So a conversation that we're having now, you can have multiple people in a room. It will pick up the audio, it will do the translation into kind of various languages. And the best example is what you're seeing here with PowerPoint here. There's slightly less languages supported today. So you need to check that the languages are, that you require are covered. So with regards to how it works, it's kind of a phased system as we go through. So we turn on the microphone and we capture something. And there's some kind of automatic kind of speech recognition, which then gets a phrase. And what you can see here is maybe a bit of noise on the line, a bit of kind of stuttering and things. And you're actually hearing, can you hear me? And then actually you can see that it's been taken into that box in the middle, and it's got, can you hear me? Now here, H-E-R-E versus H-E-A-R. So it's, the accuracy isn't great. So we need to do something around improving the accuracy of that. So you can see here that the true text processing that we have is actually kind of correcting the H-E-R-E and changing it to hear me, which is good. And then actually passing that on to the next stage of the processing. And there are kind of four stages here. You're obviously getting the raw kind of automatic speech recognition output here. So you've got, no, I mean yes, but I am. I've never done it myself. Did use this before. I will go and ask Deep to help me. So the accuracy of that is not particularly good. So there needs to be a lot more processing. Speech is very, very hard to get right. There's a fantastic sounding lattice rescoring going on here. And you can see here that it's actually correcting did users before to did you use yours before. So again, it's improving the accuracy here. This fluency removal, more processing. It's removing a lot of the unnecessary bits in there like and things before getting to kind of the final stage where it's actually giving you, four kind of sentence fragments but I've never done it before myself. So it's a lot of processing that goes on as part of this. And as a result, this significantly improves translation. It goes back to that kind of garbage in, garbage out. If you push kind of malformed text into translation, you're going to get a poor response. By doing all this extra processing, then you get a much better response there. So it gives you a bit of insight into text translation is one thing. Speech is really, really hard. We've spent many years perfecting this. You take things like Cortana and the speech services that we've had in many applications over the years. If you build on this platform, you're kind of getting that kind of best of breed kind of experience. To kind of carry that kind of flow out, once it's gone through that processing, it goes through the machine translation, and we can then do text-to-speech as well. And as it goes through all these phases, you do get partial transcripts, so you can get callbacks with what it's kind of processing as it goes along, and you'll see an example of that in one of the other demos that I've got. And you'll get the transcripts before it goes to translation, and then the translations afterwards. So there's a number of hooks in this pipeline. 10 supported language on the input, 60 for translation, and 18 on the output. So the programming model is a bit more complicated on the speech side compared to kind of the text translation. Text translation is very quick and easy to get up to, but there are SDKs and things to make life a little bit easier. The Translator Live, it was kind of announced and kind of shown yesterday. It's kind of what we're using here. It's a great for kind of two-person communication, that concept of you've got someone in front of you and they can't understand what you're saying, being able to have a conversation in your language and they see it in theirs. You know, meetings and, of course, presentations like we're having today. And actually, this is something that we'll be using, I think, in all of our presentations moving forward. And the more it gets used, the more accurate it gets. So just to switch across to another demo, just to bring it a bit more into life, is a demo bot that we've got. And this bot allows you to seamlessly switch from one language to another. So the bot itself, the language model is in English only. All the knowledge, all the answers is all in English. However, we've wired up the translator, and we can speak in Chinese and Spanish and so on with reasonably good results. So if I go to Skype, you'll see here we've got this bot. So I can say hello. There it goes. It's woken up. Say, tell me a joke. Which my daughter wrote a number of these. Great. So what I can also do is I can say, what is HoloLens, for example? And this is going off and using as your search and pulling back a knowledge article in English and giving us a photo, which is great. Now, I do speak a tiny bit of German, so I'm going to use German initially. So I'm going to ask the same question in German. So I've just asked, switching to German, and it's actually detected. You know, one of the other API features we have is, what language is this? So we can actually detect that this is a different language, and we're asking the user whether they want to switch to German. I did initially have seamless translation, where we just picked a language and instantly translated. We had quite a few false positives because, like, the word "no" is also kind of a word in Spanish and so on, and it caused some issues. So we now ask. So if I say, "Was ist HoloLens?" You should. There we go. So you can see kind of the same article is being kind of translated into German in that instance. One of the other things, just quickly, that I can do. Apologies, I couldn't remember the Chinese to get this right. So I'm going to paste this in. So one of the features we have is, what is the balance of my account? So I'm going to go in, I'm just going to say hello, and it'll switch you back to English. Great. So I'm going to type in the Chinese, which should be, what is the balance of my wedding account? So I'm going to hit enter. Yes. So it's detected the language and switched the bot into that mode. And actually, it's saying it doesn't do the translation on the card. We need to fix that. But actually, it's now saying I need to authenticate. So I'll go ahead and do the authentication kind of aspect. So if I'm checking my balance, we need to check who I am. So I'm going to log in. Great. So I'm going to ask the question in Chinese. what it should do is bring a card back with the balance of my account and actually have some information in there. So you can see we're even doing translation of all the cards and kind of buttons within the kind of the bot framework thing. So it's a great way of expanding kind of the reach of your bot with what is, to be honest, a handful, maybe a bit more kind of lines of code within a bot experience. The same thing could be done on your website, your mobile apps, and so on. That's a pretty straightforward thing to get up and running. Could I switch gears to a few more kind of base kind of services? Now, one's called linguistic analysis. So this is another cognitive service that doesn't really get much love. People kind of look at it and go, that's really scary and hard. Why on earth would I want to use that? So I spent some time to actually dig into it. And actually this, like WebLM that we'll cover next, is one of those kind of lower level services that if you're building another model, actually this is a great way of breaking up human text into the semantics of language as we go through. Now, it does sentence separation and kind of tokenization. So if I say things like, great to meet you, I need to extend my booking next week by one day, full stop. Can you also book me a car? That's a pretty complex, well, it's not, but for a computer, that's a really complex statement. Now, if you type that into a bot, it would go, what's your intent? Is it booking a hotel? Is it booking a car? Is it saying hello to me? And it will pick one of them. That's the way that Lewis works today, which it means you're missing some of those intents. So there's kind of speech tagging and constituency parsing and things that go on there. The really interesting part about this scenario that kind of struck me a few weeks ago, which I ran past the Lewis team, is to say, we've got a bit of a problem with Lewis. As customers are now getting a bit more sophisticated, they're saying, well, I want my users, my bot, to be able to construct fairly complex sentences, and I want you to split that out into three different intents. Lewis, as I said right now, will just go down the route of one and give you a score, or it may match all three, and then you've got to pick one as part of the scoring. So one of the things you can see, if, can I zoom in? Oh, yes, I can. So you can see here, one of the examples here, great to meet you, it's actually split that into a tree, into a graph here. So it's actually worked out, great to meet you is one kind of sentence. It's then split out, I need to extend my booking next week by one day, as another sentence, and then can you also book a hotel? So a great use of the linguistic analysis service is breaking up paragraphs into sentences so you can then kind of reason over that content and actually understand the intents. So I think this is something certainly in the very early bots that we're writing for customers right now from actually within services. I think we'll be definitely kind of wiring this service up to be able to handle these multiple intent sentences. And it's something that the language, the Lewis service that I'll cover next, will seek to kind of do in the future. They've got many things on their roadmap. But this is a great way of just understanding a bit more kind of context. Another scenario is we see increasingly people or customers coming and saying, I've got this document which has got lots of amazing information in it. Can you let a bot or let a user ask a question and you magically find the information in this unstructured content and give it to the user? And it's like, oh, God. Kind of. It's really, really hard. There's some technologies that go some way around doing it. Services like this are a great way of being able to extract and break down kind of paragraphs and things. So that's kind of again, it's not a service I expect all of you in the room to be going, this is amazing, it's going to change my life. It's there. I think it's definitely got some great use around the sentence kind of separation aspect. And if you're doing anything more involved, then yeah, you can kind of go ahead and kind of use that. The text analytics service is another one that we use a lot. The primary thing is actually sentiment analysis. So actually being able to take a sentence or take a paragraph and actually understand is this a positive sentiment or is this a negative sentiment? So the perfect scenario is, yeah, if you're trying to sync Twitter and actually identify if someone's saying something bad about you or your brand, you can do sentiment analysis. We've seen that many times. But actually within a bot, if someone's getting frustrated with this stupid bot that isn't responding and isn't giving the right answer, we can go, actually, sorry, I can't help. I'm now going to hand you off to a live human to actually go and resolve this. So it's a great way of detecting frustration within experience. And again, it's something that you can look to build in, and I'll show an example. Putting out entities and key phrases in text. So if you mention place names or company names and things like that, it would actually help you identify where those companies are mentioned. So a great scenario where this was used was in financial sector, wanting to understand in analyst reports what companies were mentioned in there. Now, you imagine you as a developer getting all that text and trying to find all those company names and so on. It's a service that we kind of automate a lot of that for you. We can also, with this service, detect the language as well. So if you're trying to understand what language people are talking, it's a great way forward. So pretty simple demo. Let me just set up something else to show you the sentiment. Cool. So number 8. Just a dashboard. So one of the other key things of the cognitive services that I can't emphasize enough is virtually all of these services, if you go to the cognitive services website, of all the various services here, you can go in, you can click on the section, and there's normally an interactive test where you can paste in text. Yes, I know. You can paste in text. Or upload images, and you can actually interactively actually explore whether it's going to work in your scenario or not. So the first thing I do when a customer gives me a document or images and how good is your translation is, go to the portal, don't need to pay for anything, and actually go and try it out. So if we look at text analytics, and actually the linguistic analysis has a section as well. So if we go here, then it's got a set of standard text phrases you can put in your own. You can paste in, you know, a fair amount of content in here, and it will tell you the languages, you know, the key phrases, and the sentiment. So in this one is, I had a wonderful experience. The rooms were wonderful, fantastic. Let's take a negative one. You had a terrible time at the hotel. The staff were rude and the food was awful. So let me go ahead. Okay, so the previous one was 100% sentiment. This is actually, you know, zero on the scale, something like the scale of 0% to 100%. It's a very negative sentiment. Key phrases: staff, food, terrible time, hotel. So you've actually taken, you know, a sentence and pulled out those kind of key phrases in there. It works pretty well with other examples. We can do different languages as well. Anyone speaking Spanish? It pulls out the kind of the key phrases and things in there. And like all of the services, you can also go and look at the JSON as well. So if you want to dig into what the response is, you'll be able to see the key phrases in there. You'll be able to see sentiment actually being shown, and obviously any errors that kind of come through. And to give you a real-world example of where this is being used, is this is a Power BI dashboard that we've been building for some of our first bots we're building for customers. And actually, this is a key visualization for those customers of what is that sentiment of the conversations over time. Are people enjoying the bot? Are they coming back? Are they using it? Is actually the sentiment going up or down over time as we go through? So you can actually kind of drill in, and that's the primary place where we are using the sentiment analysis. So any message that comes into our bot, we do the sentiment analysis, we store the value, and then away we go. That's kind of a key use in there. Again, the key phrase extraction is really useful as well if you're trying to kind of pull key parts of documents out. The key part, just to bear in mind, because this comes up all the time, of language support. So English, French, Portuguese, and Spanish on sentiment analysis only at this time. Key phrase extraction, English, German, Japanese, and Spanish. Topic detection is English only at this time. Language detection will do 120. So get a lot of feedback of why is my language not in there? I want this in there. Give us the feedback. Go on the website, outline the scenario, things are being prioritized based on kind of customer need and so on. So don't let that, it's not supported right now. If you have a particularly a significant scenario, then please do reach out, and things are changing kind of pretty quickly. So we've been over the text analytics kind of website. Another building block kind of service before we get into Lewis, and I show all of the new features as part of Lewis. This is a really low level kind of building block service around kind of understanding or improving accuracy of kind of word suggestions. So the way this service is actually being built is actually being trained on Bing search data. So it's kind of ingested a large part of the internet and understands, you know, that this word is most often kind of followed by this word, or at least these other three words. So if you're writing a spell checker, and the spell checker thinks you've got five different possibilities, which one do you show first? Which one do you think is more likely in that case? So actually, WebLM, by ingesting the internet, actually can help you improve the ranking and say, you know what, 80% of the time, this word always follows this word. So things like autocomplete would be a great way of actually saying the word most likely to follow this word. Is this, so you can kind of build that in to your solution. If you've got text boxes and you want to build in autocomplete, away you go. If you're doing handwriting and speech recognition, so we come back to some of those other services. If you're doing speech recognition and you think you know what this word is, but you've got a few options, WebLM is a great way of then improving your accuracy by bringing that in. So this service is used by a lot of other kind of services. A great example where this should be used is in Word. So if you go into Word and you type in a word, I think it's on a right click, you can look at synonyms and say, what are the other words that I could use here? And it just gives you a word. It gives you a kind of a word in there. Actually, if it took the context of your sentence, it could actually say, this synonym is a far better match is a far better match for that. So if they did integrate that, it would improve the synonym aspect. So really, where you need to rank or predict what words go to follow this, WebLM is a great service to kind of consider doing. Another great scenario that I've heard is around advertising keywords. So if you're trying to figure out which keywords to buy on Bing or Google, actually this is a great way of saying what other words kind of follow this to try and improve kind of the accuracy of search results. So there's been kind of some experimentations there. But really, WebLM and linguistic analysis, you know, I haven't seen a lot of use of customers. I think linguistic analysis will get a bit more. But they're kind of building block services, but I'm sure some of you have got some great scenarios where you're going, let's go and try this. A key part, you can go on the website, you can get a free key, and you can start using it. You don't need to start paying to just explore. So the next one, spell check, which I don't really need to explain kind of too much. You know, we've had spell checks in Word, spell checker in Word and so on for kind of many years. But if you want to build this into your application or your service, here you go. You have the service here. It will identify errors, give you the suggestions, and you can check a whole sentence. So you can give it a whole, you know, block of text, or you can just give it an individual word. So there's kind of a number of examples of things that it can do. Hopefully, I wasn't the only one who had to look up what a homonym was. I was like, what is that? So if we actually look at it from here, kind of word breaks in here. So allow you've got Microsoft and someone's put a space in between the O and the F. It actually spot that there shouldn't be a space there and actually tell you that it's Microsoft. So sorting out word breaks is a key one. You know, slang words as well. So someone said G-O-N-A, actually it's gonna in that case. In this case, actually someone saying Steven Spielberg with a P-H instead of a V. So for kind of celebrities and kind of various names we can do. Homonym is where you have a word that kind of sounds the same, for and four, is a way of correcting that type of work in there. So it's not just basic spell checking, it's pretty good. Even brands as well. So actually, someone's typed in Lyft with a lowercase L, it can say that's a brand, you should capitalize that. So again, nice, great service that you can easily wire in. And off you go. Now, a great example, and I was, you know, excited. I wasn't that excited, but you know, it was a great step forward with the language understanding model when they integrated the spell checker, because If you're thinking about designing an inclusive experience, it doesn't punish the user for getting a spelling slightly wrong, then you have a real problem. You know, a lot of bots today, if you get the spelling slightly wrong, it just shrugs its shoulders and goes, I don't understand, and moves on. With the spell checker, especially if it's done automatically, it will run the spell checker and then pass in the corrected answer in, and again, it improves accuracy kind of really well. So you've got here, welcome to Seattle, welcome to Seattle there. So again, it's capitalizing the H there after the full stop. I've spelt great deliberately wrong. Here, it's actually saying it's an unknown token and suggesting with a confidence rating as well. So it gives you a score, so you can then make a decision of whether you accept that or not. Lewis, for example, this is implemented by implemented automatically. You have to check the box of this laser thing's not working very well. The enable spell checker here. When you publish your model, if you check that box, it will go ahead and correct a phrase here. So if I say, "Tell me a JKE," you can see here that it's going to say it thinks it's a joke intent. But it's only 45% sure, which it may mean it doesn't actually fire that intent. With the spell checker, it's putting the altered query in, tell me a joke, and we're now getting a 99.8% score on the joke intent. So you're significantly improving the accuracy of the spell checker. You had to jump through loads of hoops to enable it. You had to get a key, and you had to, on the Azure portal for spell checker, wire it in, and all this other jumping through hoops. It's actually now free as one of the changes this week. So long as you check the box, you get the spell checker for free. You don't need to go and get kind of another key. So if you're writing bots, if you're using Lewis, please, please, please check the box. It makes a big, big difference. So on to the last section, which is probably the bit that most people are like, okay, you finally kind of got to Lewis. So hands up who's used the language understanding intent service in some way, even if they've just looked at it. So a fair kind of number of you. Good, good. So I'm going to do a bit of a kind of an overview of what it is before I get into the new features, because not everyone will necessarily kind of get all the aspects. Now, it's incredibly hard to understand human speech. If I give you Visual Studio and I say, I create a new console app and I'm going to give you a sentence. I'm going to say, book me a flight to Seattle from London in business class, leaving next Tuesday and returning 2 weeks on Wednesday. Now, if I give that text to you and say, using just the base.NET framework, pass that text, identify what the intent is, work out where I'm flying from, where I'm going to, and also good luck with resolving next Wednesday and a week, you know, and Wednesday in 2 weeks' time, actually passing that into a date time. It's almost an impossible task. And you may be able to solve it, but then I'll give you another phrase and I'll say, I need tickets to Seattle from London and I'm going to leave. And you phrase it very slightly different. And again, your code will break and you'll have to, it'll be a never-ending task. We're trying to figure out what the intent of that sentence is. What is the user trying to do? What are the entities? So yes, I want to book a flight, great. But where am I going from? Where am I going to? What's the date? What's the time? What's the class? How many children? How many adults? It's just an insane problem to try and figure out. And this is what Lewis is here to do, to help us, you know, break down a sentence and really understand what the intent is. So it's almost impossible to code yourself, I would argue. I'm sure there's some developer in the room going, I can do it. And even if you could, very kind of costly to implement. And again, if you are going to build historically your own language model, you have a data scientist locked in a room for some months, and it'll be very specific to travel or to insurance or to whatever these areas are. So it's be very kind of localized to a domain. So that's the goal of Lewis, is to try and improve how we can understand kind of human language. So you go ahead and create a model, and I'll show this interactively, all being well. And then you give it some examples. You type in some phrases, like, I want to book a flight from Seattle to London. And you give it some examples. You tell it which are the entities that you need. You train it, and you deploy it to an HTTP endpoint. There's no developers required. Well, yeah. you kind of need a developer. There's no data scientist required. You train your model and you publish it. And the beauty is it will then, as it's actively used, as you get more utterances, you can go into the portal, review them, and actually train it based on actual real-world kind of users asking. And by doing the amount of bot things I've done over the last year, you train it pretty well with a small group of people, and you put it out to a wider group. You know, I wrote a bot for an internal event called Tech Ready over a year ago, and then at Ignite, if any of you were there, kind of last year. And what was funny is you train it really, really well, and you think this is perfect, and then you realize how differently humans phrase even kind of fairly simple things. You look at it and go, really? I can kind of work out what you're trying to kind of say there, but yeah, it's human language. It's really tough. So that training aspect is really important. So let's show the Lewis portal, and I'm going to do a very simple scenario to start with, and then we'll talk about some of the improvements, and I will show those interactively. So I have some models I created earlier, which I'm going to try not to use to try and keep this a bit more on the edge. So if I create a new app, so I'm going to go ahead and just call this live demo. The languages that we support, Portuguese, Chinese, Dutch, English, French, Canadian, German, Japanese, Spanish, Mexican. So there's some new ones in there that I'll talk about. So I'm going to do English. I choose a key that I get from the Azure portal, and I hit create. So I'll talk a bit more about kind of the new dashboard kind of in a moment, but we come into the experience here and we don't have any intents, we don't have kind of much kind of going on here. So the first thing I'm going to do is, if I'm building a language model for a travel thing, booking a flight is one of the intents I'm going to create. So I'm going to call it book flight. This is just the name of the intent that you'll get as a developer. So I'll say book flight, and then I'm going to give it some examples. So I'm going to say, I want to book a flight from Seattle to London. And I'm going to say I need a flight from London to Amsterdam, leaving next Tuesday and returning next Friday. It's taken a little while. I don't know why it's taken so long. Let's carry on. Don't do this to me. Okay, let's carry on. I need to book a flight. So what we should see is them appear in the box below. Let's just refresh it. Book flight. Lovely. Okay, let me just refresh this. May have signed me out. Let's have a look. So if I do live demo, look at the intent, book flight. Let's try this again. I need to book a flight. Okay, so. Maybe it signed me out. So I need to book a flight. It's put it in there. So I'm also going to say I need to book a flight from London to Seattle. And I'm going to do I need to book a... I want flight to Seattle. Leaving from London next Tuesday. So go ahead. I've kind of put in a few utterances, as simple as that. You kind of paste them in, you can upload a bunch of them as well. Now, okay, fine, it's not really doing kind of very much kind of in that instance, but I can go ahead and save them. I can go into the entities now. So one of the things I can add is some pre-built entities. So I've said in here, geography. So we can automatically detect for you continents, countries, cities, postcodes, and so on in there. So I can go ahead and add the geography kind of intent there. But I can also go ahead and add the date time. So if I go back into date time V2, which is a new thing in here. So I'm going to go ahead and just quickly train this. Now, with any luck, if I go back into intents, you can see it's actually, now I've added those intents in, it's actually showing that in those utterances, it's actually worked out the, I want flights to, it hasn't worked out Seattle for some reason, of course, yeah, leaving from geography, and it's worked out kind of a date time, got geography to geography, I need to book a flight. So they're all kind of good examples as we go here. So now if I say, I want a flight to Berlin. If I press enter, it should actually interactively. Again, it's kind of picked up that kind of geography in that aspect as well. And if I say I want to book a business class flight to Seattle, I'll keep pressing hash. You can actually see here, this is an entity that I actually want to create. That's going to be the class of travel. So you can go ahead and decorate in real time an entity. So I can click on this and actually click on business class and say, create me a new entity, which is class, for example. I'm going to create that entity. And it'll go ahead and it's now added that entity in. So actually by providing the utterances in, I can go in and click on various things and actually get it to kind of add them in kind of automatically. So that kind of gives you a kind of a very brief example of how you can get started with providing utterances and providing those entities. Now, if I save this and I go into train, and I'll come back and show a few more advanced features in a minute. If I just publish this, let me just train it. And publishing means you get a REST endpoint, which you can kind of query. I'm going to publish this. Remember, enable spell checker is over here, which is really good. So if I hit publish, I've then got an endpoint here. So I can then type in here, I need a flight to Berlin from London, leaving next Tuesday. If I press return on here, we should see the JSON here. So it's really convinced it's the book flight intent. And if we go down, it's worked out next Tuesday. So I've typed in next Tuesday. It's actually given me the date time. As a developer, you get told book flight, and it gives me the date time. And we can get really advanced, as you'll see. It's actually worked out Berlin is a city. Funny enough, and it's worked out kind of the entity there. So if you're designing a conversational interface as a developer, you get told what the intent of the conversation is, and you kind of get given parameters to actually help you fulfill that task. Now, if the user gives you everything in one sentence, you can just get on with it and actually go and use it kind of live. If they don't give you all the entities, then you follow up with another kind of question kind of as we go through. As a very kind of quick kind of run through of some of that. So I'm going to go back over some improvements of Lewis, and then we'll come back and I'll show a much more complex example here. So for those of you that have used Lewis, some things on this slide will probably make you very, very pleased, if not saying, well, why didn't we have that a year ago? But this was kind of announced yesterday, but a lot of these have come out this week. So I've got slides on each of them. So when you get the deck, you can go through and kind of look at them. It was more of a backup in case the new bits didn't work. But I'll go through and show them live. But just to run through, staging. Before, you could train it and you could publish it. But if you wanted to have a pre-production environment, you couldn't do that. There was actually no kind of multiple stagings you could do. So there's now a staging and a production kind of deployment slot. There's also versioning. So before, if you trained with new utterances and you created new entities, there was no way of going to go back to an older version. You could export the JSON and manage it manually, but it was just a nightmare and just didn't meet the basic needs of a lot of customers. So we have versioning. And then the one that I get beaten up by customers almost every day is, when I create a Lewis model, it's on my Microsoft account. But if I were to share that with the dev team, how do I do that? I have to give them my password to my Microsoft account, which is not going to happen. So then people ended up having to create a new Microsoft account and then share that with the team. And a lot of enterprises, that breaks all sort of compliance rules and it's all terrible. You can now share. So you can add in another ID and people can kind of collaborate across a model. Very basic, but it makes it made things a lot easier. So language support. So we're also announcing Dutch and Korean are now live on the portal, along with some other kind of dialects as well. So for those of you waiting for that, I know there's a lot of customers in Korea. They're like, come on, where is it? So we have that. We now have I feel a bit embarrassed to have to announce that we've now got good documentation. Documentation was very poor. It is now amazing across the bot framework and the cognitive services. So it's had a huge upheaval. It's been moved to the doc.microsoft.com site. So a big, big step forward. We've also increased the intent and the entity limit. It was kind of like 20 intents and kind of less kind of entities. It's now been increased to 80 and 30. And we plan to raise those limits kind of progressively. Now, a bit of a lecture, though, on this point. I see quite a few customers who are like, I need more intents. I've got 80 already. Please stop. The general experience, if you try and wire up your language model for every single possible question someone may ask your bot, that's not, in our experience, and my opinion, the right way to go. Train your language model around the intents, the things your bot can do. More general questions like, why is the sky blue, and when was the company founded, and what's your telephone number? Let that go to the unknown handler and use something like Azure Search to actually go and index kind of knowledge sources or Q&A maker. Don't try and train the language model for every possible variation. You're not going to get great results in that case. There's a number of these pre-built domains, which I will show. These allow you to kickstart your model. So instead of just having pre-built entities, you've got domains for like travel and communication and booking a car and weather and so on. And that will add intents, utterances, and entities into your model. So you can go from an empty model to kind of a kickstarted model with a whole bunch of kind of things added for you. And then you can mix and match and just choose you want the entities or the models. Again, I'll show this. There's a lot of other kind of features like the new dashboard, kind of testing lists, which I'll show now, and something called semantic dictionary. So we'll hit a few more slides in a second, but just to go through kind of a couple of the highlights. So the dashboard, if you ever looked at it before, if I go to, this is a bot that I run internally for us to do lots of customer demos. So you can see here on the dashboard, we've got this great view of endpoint hits. So how many times is it being hit? You can see your intents and your entities and the utterances. You can look at the number of hits on that kind of model there. You can also understand the intent breakdown. What are people asking? You know, a lot of stuff's going to none, which, given we're using a knowledge base, is pretty good. So you've got this great kind of initial dashboard, which is really helpful. If we go ahead and kind of look at them, we've got the intents and things in here. While I'm on this model here, you can do interactive testing. So I can say, what is my balance? I can hit enter. And what you'll see. Yeah. It's loading the results. I wonder if it's gone to sleep. So what you should see is the interactive kind of view of things there. Okay, let me just. The other aspect you can do is actually batch testing. So again, okay, that wasn't me that time. Let's switch back. Okay. Things are sent to try me. I've just unplugged the cable, plug it back in, see if it springs back to life. If not, I'll go back to my screenshots. Aren't I glad I put them in the deck? Okay, I'll give it a couple of minutes. If not, so I think that's a hardware problem up here. Okay. Aren't you glad that I created slides with screenshots? So you'll have to miss... Okay, it's not switching back to the slides now. Okay, we're back on the slides. Shall I try the PC again just to see if it magically has fixed itself? Okay, it has. Okay, so batch testing. So one of the other aspects is you can have a data set and you can actually pull in a list of utterances and what should or should not be shown in here. Wow, okay. It's going even better now. So if we look at the actual test kind of data set, we've got a few more minutes. If we've got the test data set when it opens up, it's just a JSON file where you provide the utterance and you say what the intent should be. And if I go ahead and upload that and I say test one, if I hit save and hit run, what it will go through is actually run that data set actually across that and show you any false positives, what the accuracy is, and you can see there's a mistake and a bug down here. So there's some bulk testing, which has been a really, really kind of important feature for kind of more enterprise types of kind of scenarios. So the testing aspect has been really kind of important. Versioning, I've touched on. If you go into the settings, you can clone a version and import and export it. As well as the deployment slots. For those of you who love to do automated builds, all of this stuff can be done through APIs. So you could script all of this as part of a build and actually have continuous integration and things. I've touched on the sharing, so you can now add a collaborator to your Lewis model, which is, again, important. Again, the testing thing that I kind of showed there, a simple JSON structure, you provide the text, what the intent should be, and what entities it should detect, and it will go ahead and actually validate that, again, through continuous testing, that you haven't actually caused any issues. A key part of the kind of kickstart aspect, so this is not live right now. Within the next few hours, it should be live on the Lewis portal, are these pre-built domains. So you've got communication, entertainment, camera, gaming, home automation, fitness, events, which will add those intents, those entities, and those utterances. So it's a great way of going from an empty language model to a pretty sophisticated language model. And you can just take individual kind of pieces of this. The pre-built entities have been around for quite a while, age and geography and percentage and temperature. Date time has had a massive improvement along with numbers as well. So for those of you who used it before, it wouldn't always be able to kind of process all of that kind of aspect in there. You can now do durations from May the 1st to May the 5th, and next Tuesday and leave after 5 days. And a key part of this, those entity recognizers can actually be processed as part of, or actually being externalized into a GitHub package. So if you want to build any of this into your own solutions, you can go ahead and actually pull this down and even contribute kind of improvements and so on kind of through this aspect as well. So I think I've got a minute, it says, kind of up here. The phrase lists and are a key aspect where it will use Bing data now and allow you to actually build out extra suggestions. So if you put in cities, for example, or songs, it would actually use Bing data and actually expand out the kind of the entities that you've got as part of kind of the language model in there. So it's a great way of improving kind of the range of entities. You don't need to know every single one. So this is all live on the portal now. And the last kind of key part is really the list entities. The other entity types have to be, they use machine learning, so it tries to guess patterns. If you have a product name, for example, product names, you can upload those as a fixed list, a white list. So it'll always get 100% accuracy on that matching. So if you're doing product names, session codes, names of people, it improves the accuracy significantly. So really should look at list entities for where there is a fixed set of items that could match that entity. If you want to use phrase lists, then it will use machine learning and be a bit more advanced. So these new list entities in our testing have improved things significantly. And as I said, we've got the new language support, which a lot of people have been asking. We've also got Lewis deployed in the US, Europe, and Asia as of yesterday. So the service is now deployed in various regions, which for compliance reasons will unblock kind of a number of kind of customers that we do today. So kind of really in kind of summary, we've shown the Lewis service to be really part of kind of bots, but it can be built into your services as well. It doesn't have to be something that's built into a bot. It can be part of an application kind of as well. We've been on a bit of a journey across a number of these different services. Hopefully that's given you a bit of a sense of what these services are and how they work. Go to the Cognitive Services website, get a free key, and you can kind of party on and start to use those services. So that's it kind of from me. Happy to stay and kind of take questions afterwards. Good luck with using the language services and have a good rest of build.